Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Kay Kamini. Kay Kamini earned a BA in Writing and Women's Studies at the University of Pittsburgh. Her poetry has been published in City Paper, the Pittsburgh Quarterly, and in the anthologies Dark Side of the Moon, Voices from the Parlor, Raven, Voices from the Attic, Volume 13, and in the Sandberg Livesay anthology, No Choice But to Trust. She is a certified Gestalt therapist, retired welfare caseworker, grandmother, feminist, and energy healer. Hi, Kay. How you doing?
Hi, Jen. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. You're going to read some poems from your new manuscript, which has the long title of St. Patrick's Day Massacre at the Blade Runners Arena in Harmerville.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a working title.
Yeah.
It may get shorter. I'm going to start with a long sentence. This was at one time 2 pages. I've got it down to a half a page now. A long sentence. The fat yellow bumblebee pollinates the coreopsis that grows under my kitchen window, where I stand washing dishes and thinking about my daughter, who recently gave birth to Henry, my first grandchild, who has taken my heart on a ride of joy greater even than when I fell in love and had my own babies back in the 60s, when loving was really the in thing, except it was not so loving, when our president was shot and the red blood on Jackie's pink suit will forever be a picture I can recall in an instant, and nothing can erase it completely, just perhaps transmute it into something that had to be so that our country could become a collection of insensitive multinational corporations intent on profit at any cost, ignoring the screaming environmental destruction of oil spills and dying oceans, ignoring the pain of poverty and starving people, ignoring the AIDS epidemic, spreading the culture of fear and intimidation. So we stand like cattle in airport lines, calling it security, and the rich build war machines and get richer, calling it progress, so that everyone can buy more cheap goods and spend time and money watching images on a screen, all the while being corrupted and separated from our souls until we are no longer outraged by the rape of our country, the repression of our radical voices, the murders committed in the name of national security, and we shrink from each other, relinquish medical care to the corporation, give children and aging ones to institutions, eat food filled with pesticides and hormones, and believe that this is right and good, and lose touch with the passions of a child being born, or watching a fat yellow bumblebee pollinate the coreopsis. And I'm going to switch gears now and go back to my teenage years. A long, long time ago, Parental Controls, 1957. We crammed 8 kids into Jimmy Hall's 57 Ford Fairlane after the game. We're on our way to have burgers and shakes to celebrate. First, I said we have to stop at my house so I can get permission to come along. My father came out to the car to talk to Jimmy. He grilled him. How long have you been driving? How old are you? Did you ever get a ticket for speeding? And on, smelling his breath for booze. I was embarrassed. This car will do 120, he said, and leaned into the open window to survey the crowd. My dad will take away my keys if I speed, Jimmy assured him. I held my breath. Jimmy was usually a smartass. He loved cars, worked in his dad's car store. After my dad was out of earshot, Jimmy joked. I didn't tell him I got this car cheap because it conks out at 80. Everyone laughed. We pulled away, and as I looked out the back window, I watched my dad brush the stones off his socks before he went back into the house. The next one is about my son. Staking the dahlia. The starter dahlia was a gift from the old woman to whom he delivered groceries every Monday and Thursday. You must tie it to a stake as it grows, she said. It needs the support so that it will bloom. His apartment was too dark for growing plants, so he took it to his mother's and visited it weekly. It grew thick and green, but no buds appeared. Then he remembered the woman's advice, tore up an old towel, staked it. Within a week, there were buds. Another week, and blooms appeared. As a father, he remembered the dahlia, how it needed support to blossom. agreed to coach his son's baseball team. The cornfield on Avenue D. It is the early 40s, before the mines drain into the creek, turning it orange with rust and sulfur. Every few years, the land is enriched when the Loyalhanna Creek spills over its banks, washing rich, loamy soil onto the fields. The mid-July corn is sweet and tender. Farmer Williams takes our dollar and trusts us to pick just the 3 dozen we pay for. Our mouths water. We count carefully. The sweat trickles down our backs as we snap ears from stalks in the hot afternoon. In the backyard, my brother and I shuck, stuffing the mess of silk and leaves into brown paper sacks. Mom slices tomatoes, puts a huge pot of water on to boil. Grandma sniffs, corn is for pigs, in her thick German accent. When we smell it, it is done. Juicy kernels stuck to our cheeks, greasy with butter.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Kay Kamini, reading her new work. I want to ask you, Kay, sort of where you find your poems, because you have a really interesting history as a person. I mean, you have, you know, as working as a caseworker, a healer. What else? There's a lot of stuff on that bio. A gestalt therapist. Yeah. Do you feel that, you know, that kind of range of experience helps you find poems differently, or do you draw on personal experience at all for your work?
So mostly it's my life, what happens to me, the things that move me, that I find interesting or that touch my heart. Of course, you know, my children and grandchildren, and mm-hmm. you know, and the one of the ones I'm going to read, the roller derby poem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just stuff that goes on around me, the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. The Super Bowl.
Hurricane Katrina. I mean, just, you know, all those things have been occasions for me to write poems.
Right. How do you know when, I mean, there's everything going on around us, so how do you know when to pull in something? How do you know what feels like a poem for you?
Well, for me, it's what has the most energy, what touches my heart. Mm-hmm. And then what I can find words for. Always helps.
Yeah, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your writing process? I don't know if you have any kind of routine or practice set up, or if you walk around with pieces of paper in your pocket, et cetera. What For people who are out there, you know, starting to write, or, you know, give them something.
All right. Well, I liked what Naomi Nye had to say. That one workshop I did with her was just carry a notebook around, and I do that, and write down whatever phrase comes to you. Mm-hmm. That a phrase or a small poem every day, every so often. Mm-hmm. Waiting rooms are a great place to write, you know.
Okay.
And but I like to write mostly in the mornings. I get up and feel, I don't know, clearer then, I guess.
Okay.
About what I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really essential that writers find the time that's best for them to write. I'm sort of a mid-afternoon writer or late night. Mm-hmm. Forget about morning. But it, you know, everyone has to find their own rhythms, and it's essential to find that. So. Okay, well, why don't you read some more poems?
Okay, I'm going to read the title poem. St. Patrick's Day Massacre at the Blade Runners Arena in Harmerville. The slumber party slashers move ahead of the hot metal hellions, 113-90. Front row seats and the wind from the skaters blows into our faces. The guy behind us keeps yelling, "Kill the ref!" The penalty box is a white plastic lawn chair. The deadpan announcer looks like the judge from TV's Night Court. Derby hat perched on the back of his head, retro shiny sharkskin suit. Busty brawler shoves a shoulder, sugar plum scary, sprawls and rolls, gets up grinning. It's the opening match of the Steel City Derby Demons' new roller derby league. The place is sold out. Second period, wham, bam, pam in the penalty box. Damaged doll tears up the track. The refinator peeps his whistle, signals the jammer she can now begin to score. The crippler glides on pink wheels, a point for each opponent she passes. Formaldehyde chats with Betty Bonecrusher, then trips her. She heads for the penalty box. At intermission, children the size of leprechauns dance to Irish folk music. They stomp their feet, arms stiff at their sides. Frizzy orange curls bounce as people eat kielbasa and French fries. Last period, skaters poised and ready to go. The slasher's pink baby doll pajamas are rumpled. The hellion's neon green shorts and halters are dusty. Points score too fast to see. Everyone hooting and stomping. The announcer is losing his voice. The hellions win it by 2 points.
Nice poem.
I like that one, too. And this one's a slower, more serious one. Morning walk in Riverfront Park after bypass surgery, April 2002. Blood-red shoots of bamboo pierce the winter-flooded, muddy edges of the Monongahela. Canada geese honk their mating calls. Winter-dried sumac gives way to the surprise of tiny green leaves on a bush at the bend in the trail. I speak to the construction worker who agrees it is not a swimming pool they are building at the eastern boundary of the park. New sewage lines for the Southside Works project flush the recent rainfall into the river through pristine pipes. My healing heart beats steadily, grafted arteries bypass blockages, amid the constant change of season and construction, the temporary limestone path of forgiving support under my feet. And this is another Pittsburgh event about the Bodies exhibit. Bodies, an exhibit at the Carnegie Science Center. They are yellowish, dry, naked, and wrinkled. One is posed in a come-hither posture, hand under his head, ankle crossed over his knee, penis semi-erect. Another is kicking a soccer ball. One holds a tennis racket, muscles taut. The next exhibit displays the skin from a whole body, scalp to toes, including nails, hair on head and pubes. My own skin prickles. We lose millions of skin cells every day. 70% of our house dust is dead skin cells. Lighted display cases with lungs and kidneys, bones and veins are scattered about the darkened room. I scan the coronary arteries, find the spot where my aneurysm is, and point it out to you. We find the part of the hip bones where yours is wearing out. Holding hands, we move on to the reproductive organs, reading facts about 250,000 eggs at birth, fertilization. The fetal exhibit has a sign at the entrance to a sheltered room. This display may disturb some people. Caution is advised. The tiny body of the 4-week fetus floats at the top of the container, smaller than my pinky nail. Perfectly formed body, no face. Later, at home, we make love for hours. And one more Pittsburgh event after the Super Bowl, 2006. Pittsburgh erupts with a giant roar. Fans pour from their homes, shouting, "Here we go, Steelers, here we go!" Fireworks erupt, horns honk every time a terrible towel is waved. The Gateway Clipper blows a Steelers song. Every train coming through the South Side lays on their whistle long past the crossing. I watch from my hillside window, wondering if you watch the game alone too. Then join the black and gold throng, sliding down the snowy streets and city steps, listening to the roar increase as we flow down to the flats, fill Carson Street in a river of joy. I walk past your street, wondering why you left me. Riot police stand in phalanx across South 18th, face and body shields in place. Mounted officers sit calmly atop 4 chestnut stallions, solemn-faced in a sea of smiles. Freezing temperatures and blowing winds do not dispel the force of the celebration. Our city is a giant stadium filled with cheering fans. I smile at everyone, for the moment forgetting my broken heart. Three young men with pretty women on their shoulders, waving golden towels, singing in deep bass voices about the home team. Tattooed and bare-chested, one silly guy yells and takes a belly slide on the icy street. We got one for the thumb reverberates in the crowd. After an hour, my fingers are numb. The crowd has warmed my heart, and I have only fleeting thoughts of you. And the next one's about a small cousin of mine many years ago, 45 years ago. Nancy Marie, a child from Clover Hill. Her suffering ended just before dawn, leaving a small mound of freckles and bones on the bed in what had been the living room years ago, before the brain tumor and blindness. She had red hair, curly red hair, freckles everywhere, freckles. I babysat for her when her parents, my cousins, went dancing. We played guessing games. I told her about clouds. She taught me to read Braille, liked to feel the sun on her face. She remembered colors, green grass, blue tricycle, her mother's red lipstick, saw them in her dreams. Canadian cobalt radiation took away her flaming hair. Silk sheets alleviated the pain of touching. Morphine made her drowsy at the end. The day she died, I stood in my kitchen window washing dishes. It was my birthday. I watched Mr. Dell carry her to his hearse. My daughter kicked in my belly.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Kay Kamini. Kay, I want to say that I really like your reading voice. It's really comforting. You know, it's such a nice voice.
Thank you.
And I think it works really well with what you're doing. You have this really nice extended narrative, which sort of contributes to a welcoming in your poems. It's almost like a voice we can walk around in the poems, I mean, and take our time. You know, it's like voice as comfortable chair or something like that. But I think that's such a strength in your work. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, did you set out to construct longer lines or a full narrative, or, you know, anything you might want to mention?
Well, I've always loved stories and poetry, both, and this combines the two. And listening to my grandmother tell stories when I was a child was one of my very, very favorite things to do. And she was the one who really taught me to love poetry, too. She taught me to memorize poems when I was very young. And it's in my cells. You know.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Do you have poems about your grandmother?
No, not a single one.
Really?
Good idea.
Yeah, it seems like
I've been wondering what to write about next.
There's some material there.
I think there might be.
Yeah, that seems so important when you just said that. So you memorized poems as a young child?
Yes.
And said them back to her, or
yes, she babysat me for 3 weeks when my younger brother was born, and it was a different town, so I didn't see my mother that whole time. She wanted to keep me distracted so I wouldn't be homesick. Mm-hmm. So she kept my mind very busy. So mm-hmm. I memorized long poems. You know,
really?
Yeah, The Last Leaf by Oliver Wendell Holmes, and The Night Before Christmas, and things like that. You know.
Oh, great. So, okay. So you think there's some connection between that? You keep talking about heart in your, mm-hmm. you know, how you find poems, what you like in poems, and you know, asking about narrative. You mentioned your grandmother, which is heart related. It seems like heart is huge here.
Considering I've had bypass surgery, I suppose it is very figural.
Yeah. I like the way that you're not you don't hesitate to go into more difficult material or darker material, and you have quite a range. I mean, going from the Super Bowl to the transplant poem.
That's right. Well, it's hard to figure out how to arrange these things.
No, I'm not criticizing
it. No, you're not.
I'm just saying it's, you know, I think that's a plus because, you know, some people seem to stay on one level of things. So, no, that's a positive.
Oh,
so,
yeah. I get bored at the same level.
Okay. Okay. Do you have more poems to read?
I do.
Okay.
I have The Neighbor. This man lived across the street from me for 35 years, I think. And one day he wasn't there anymore. The neighbor. I watched the house across the street, emptied now of the occupant, the furniture, the cats, and the airplane parts. No more homemade compression balms startling me out of my chair. No more sauna parties on Sundays, and no more parking crunches. The rusted car in the garage has been hauled away, the garbage trees cut down. Empty liquor bottles sit lumpy in blue bags, waiting for recycling. His friends mixed his ashes with spectacular fireworks and scattered his remains into the sky. This one, there's one about my mother. My mother's earrings. She couldn't see as far as the mirror, not the tiny details she needed to insert the diamond studs. That's what she said every time I drove her to a wedding or a funeral, dressed in her best blue dress. She always bought blue dresses because they matched her eyes. She would announce that I had to put her earrings in before we got out of the car. "Why didn't you ask me before we left your house?" I would ask through gritted teeth. As we arrived, twisted in my seat, hip crunched against the steering wheel, I reached over the gear shift and tried to put in her earrings. She only wore them for special occasions, so the holes were mostly closed and had to be pierced exactly right with a stud. She couldn't turn her head because of arthritis. We ended up standing outside the car in the snow or rain, each caring for the other in our own particular way. The Shoe on the Highway. A black and white high top in the middle of Route 58 sits upright, its tongue pointing to the sky. I wonder, where is the foot? Who put that shoe there? Where is the mate? We travel north to your doctor to prepare you for hernia surgery, scheduled for the next day. Your smile is wide, contentment leaking from you as you tell me to make the next right turn. We stay overnight at the Burning Light Motel, our first trip together. We play in the pool, soak in the jacuzzi, have a pleasant meal at Evelyn's Eatery. Christine is our waitress. It is her last day on this job. Tomorrow she will be the new librarian at the Mercer Public Library. Your surgery goes well. On the drive home, we again pass the shoe, remarkably undisturbed. Life expectancy. The TV news reports life expectancy is now 78.6 years. September slithers into October, slanted light. That allows me 11 years and 2 months to write my kick-ass poem, find my true love, and live happily ever after. Today, I pull out another gray hair. The maple in the neighborhood garden turns red-orange too early.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Kay Kamini, reading her new work. What advice would you give to new writers out there who are thinking, well, I don't know if I can do this, I don't know how to start, what should I do, et cetera? Because I know that there was some time that you were away from writing.
Yes. I started writing in the early 90s and then stopped for about 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. I just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It scared me, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I found my courage and really knew that I wanted to do this, mm-hmm. that I wanted to write poetry. And so I started writing again and signed up for workshops and just kept coming back. And every day I would sit down and write something. And things that I thought were terrible or didn't work, I just kept working at and reworking and reading out loud. I read out loud to myself after every revision. It helps me a lot to hear the rhythms and feel the pace of the poem. And then taking it to workshop and having other people give me feedback. And sometimes things I think are really not good poems turn out to be something other people like to hear. And it's a subject that I'm tired of or I'm too familiar with that is new to someone else. So it's just put it out there, I guess would be the shortest few words of advice I would give to anybody.
Mm-hmm. And you said you found your courage. Do you know what enabled you to return after that time period?
Well, coming back from heart surgery was a big deal. I was advised that I wouldn't, be well again. But I am. I walk every day. I watch my diet. I do yoga. I meditate. I do all those things that all of the alternative medicine people talk about. And they've worked for me very well. I feel healthy most of the time.
That's great.
So, and that was a hard thing to learn how to do. It took a lot of discipline. I much preferred to, sleep rather than exercise or, eat chocolate or, things like that.
I can relate to that.
French fries with gravy, all those things I miss now.
Yeah.
But
okay. Well, good advice. We have time for one more poem.
I have a short one to finish with. Okay. The Goodnight Phone Call. Twilight birds chirp, auburn sky bodes clear weather tomorrow. The night is warm and moist. Barney Miller reruns are on TV. You phone to tell me about your day, full of details about the movie shoot, the bad directions, the puppet that is an identical match for the actor that got bludgeoned at the end of the scene. I hit the record button and listen to you.
It's the poetry of Kay Kamini. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
It's great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have the work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Amy Sutton, Michelle Stoner, and Ben Cole. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.